United States versus Komodo, Mr. Bataki.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Joel Bertocchi, and I represent the defendant in this case, the appellant Kyle Komodo. I want to start by talking a little bit about the discovery issues here, and in particularly set the context for a number of Brady violations. The context was the open file policy. And the open file policy, which the government declared it was following then and still declares it was following, means something specific. It means, first, that the file has to be open, that the defense is going to get everything. The idea behind that is that then nobody has to have conversations like this one. Nobody has to worry about whether a defense attorney later on is going to come up with an exculpatory theory for some piece of evidence that a prosecutor missed. The defense attorney, on the other hand, doesn't have to worry about whether the government is going to be making decisions, as the AUSA in this case seemed to be doing, about what is good for, what is relevant to his theory of the case versus the defense theory of the case. So you have an open file policy. The second thing about an open file policy is that the file has to be full of all the stuff that the government has, and the government is broader than the trial team that the government in this case refers to. It may not be literally every federal agency anywhere in the world, but it's certainly any federal agency that has anything to do with the facts of this case.
Yeah. What is the indication that that they knew there was exculpatory evidence in these computer files?
Well, Your Honor, part of the reason that you have an open file policy is that they don't.
I don't understand why you're harping on the open file policy. You have to show that the government knew that it had exculpatory evidence and it didn't turn it over to you.
Your Honor, there's a number of instances in which the record indicates both that we know there is evidence out there and we have good reason to believe that it may have had exculpatory value.
No, but what's the evidence that the government knew it had exculpatory evidence?
Well, what's in the record the government knew as well as the defense knew, Your Honor. For example, the government was aware, when you talk about customer service databases, there is a sliver of 6,400 customer inquiries that happened to be seized on paper, that were printed, that were raised at trial, brought up at trial. Those 6,400, which is a relatively small number out of the total, indicate that less than a third of 1% of the people complained about the theory that the government tried this case on, that Mr. Komodo misrepresented this or that his callers misrepresented this as a credit card when it was a pay-as-you-go card. That sliver, although it's small, indicates that the actual customer services databases at SOS and at the Bay Area Business Council, which were seized by the government, might have, based on what we know, would have had similar evidence in them, and that if that sample got bigger, the strength of that evidence would have gotten bigger and it would have been more exculpatory. We know the government seized those databases. We know that the Saturday before a Monday trial, the government turned over 13 hard drives from the Bay Area Business Council, and none of them are readable to the defense. We know that after the trial.
Why aren't they readable to the defense?
Well, this requires me to go into a little bit of computer science, which my colleague, Mr. Ferris, who knows about this, will throw a pencil at me if I get it wrong. But what they provided at that time were forensic copies of hard drives that had been seized at the Bay Area Business Council. And as I understand it, a forensic copy is an image of all the ones and zeros on the hard drive, of everything on the hard drive. There are a lot of different software applications you can use to create a forensic copy. The government chose, apparently, to use an application that is proprietary to the government. And so as we understand it, we can't read it because we can't get on a government computer that has this software. But it's interesting because after the trial was over, defense counsel kept looking and discovered from an FBI agent that the government had a readable copy of all of these hard drives, and that the FBI agent who had it said, "We'll give it to you if the prosecutor says it's okay." And the prosecutor, who apparently thought it was worth turning over on the Saturday before a Monday trial, said, "No, you're fishing." Well, this is where I come back to open file. Open file and fishing expedition are two phrases that don't belong in the same case.
Has anyone looked at this material?
No, because we can't get it. They still won't give it to us in a manner that we can read. All they are is hard drives. We hired an expert, a former Navy SEAL data analyst. He can't read them. Nobody can read them because unless you have the application by which the forensic copy was made, you can't read it.
Did you ask them to make readable copies?
Yes. A specific request was made after trial, and the Brady obligation still exists. I'm sorry?
What was the response?
The response was, no, it's not relevant to sentencing, and you're on a fishing expedition. But a fishing expedition, you can't have a fishing expedition in an open file. The point of an open file policy is nobody's fishing. The point of an open file policy is I don't have to fish because I've got everything. And the Brady obligation, as the case law says, doesn't change at the Saturday after trial from the Saturday before trial. So if those things had to be turned over.
Where physically were these pieces of evidence located?
When they were seized or after?
After they were seized.
After they were seized, I'm not sure we know, Your Honor. We know from FBI inventory sheets that some of them were kept by the FBI, some of them were kept by the Postal Service. The secret, when we made these inquiries after the trial, the FBI agent, I'm not sure where he was located, said he had the Bay Area Business Council material in a readable form. The SOS material was located in Waco, Texas, at a Secret Service facility. I think I've got that right.
And some were in Postal Service in Fairview Heights?
Postal Service was involved. They had some.
My point is that they weren't, the U.S. Attorney's Office didn't have them.
I don't know. I can't say what was in the U.S. Attorney's Office, but I can say that the case law says that that the U.S. Attorney is responsible for what's in the Secret Service's possession in Waco, what's in the FBI's possession, wherever it is. I can't say that the AUSA did not open his personal file in his desk, but that's not what it means.
Well, the government says that you had the hard drives on November 1st, 2007, and didn't ask for forensic, or didn't complain about the fact that they were forensic images until March 17th.
Your Honor, what we had in November, what we got in the fall of 2007, was not the 13 hard drives that were turned over on March 29th of 2008. What happened in the original discovery exchange was that the prosecutor told the defense attorney, send us an empty hard drive. We will load all our digital discovery onto it and send it back. And they did so. So we had a hard drive full of digital evidence. But as we analyzed it, it became clearer and clearer as they prepared for trial that there was stuff that hadn't been turned over.
What did you get on November? I don't understand. What did you get on November 1st, 2007?
Your Honor, my understanding is, and let me take a look at my notes if I may take a second and check that date. What we got was a hard drive that we had provided to the government empty, that they had filled with digital evidence and given back.
And was that satisfactory?
No, Your Honor. We thought it was because we thought we were working on an open file policy. But as we began to review it and as we prepared for trial, it became clear over time that it wasn't.
I don't understand. When did you look at the hard drive?
They probably started looking for it then, but
you had it. You got something November 1st. So
yes.
But when did you look?
Well, it wasn't. I don't think it was apparent just from plugging the hard drive into a computer that it wasn't complete. What happened is they began to look at it and prepare in light of witnesses' testimony, they began to find links to documents where the documents weren't there, or documents that referenced other documents that weren't there that they knew had been part of the records that were seized. The government seized everything at all of these locations. And so the defense attorneys concluded these things must exist. We have reasonable grounds. So they began to make requests early in 2008. And the government wasn't responding. The way those 13 hard drives, which came to be turned over prior to trial, is that in March, just before, about a couple of days before trial, there was a meeting. And the government said, we don't have anything else.
It says that on August 20th, 2007, you told the court that you had been informed there were over 3 million pages of written discovery and hundreds of thousands of digital recordings that need to be examined in preparation for trial. So didn't you realize when you got just that one hard drive on November 1st that this couldn't be?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The hard drive that we got on November 1st contained 315,000 digital files, 815 voice log records, and accounting for 35 hours of video. I think it took a while to figure that out. After that, there were requests. The requests were turned down. And then, shortly before trial, there was a meeting.
After that, there were requests for what?
There were requests for more. There was an indication
that
there's more material.
The things that you found
indicated that there were more.
Indicated other things, and then you asked for that.
Yes.
When did you discover that these were forensic images rather than native code?
Well, Your Honor, the reason the forensic image comes up.
When did you discover that these were forensic images?
My guess, I don't know, but the record indicates that that an expert had been hired, and so probably shortly after we received them.
When
which was
that?
The Saturday before the Monday trial, Saturday the 29th of March.
Well, I didn't. So until then, you thought that what you'd gotten on November 1st was everything and that it would be readable?
No, until then, we were arguing with the government about whether they were going to give us more. And we were asking for more time to analyze what we had. It was still a huge quantity of material. But then 13 more hard drives show up.
When did you discover that there were forensic images mixed in there?
It's not that they were mixed in, Your Honor. What we discovered is that we received the 13 hard drives we received 2 days before trial were forensic images. We had asked them.
They never sent you forensic images before
that? No. The reason forensic images come up at all is because I think the defense had lost faith in the government's ability to accurately describe whether it had turned over material completely. And so they said, no, we want forensic images. And the government, at least with respect to those 13 hard drives, turned over forensic images. Unfortunately, they turned them over in a format that's unreadable. And they still haven't turned over the SOS databases in any form.
Images were, at least according to this FBI agent, they are in readable form somewhere.
To the government, yes. But not to us, and to this day, we haven't read them. I'd like to take a moment to talk about the sentencing issue, Your Honor. I'm not really sure how to approach it because the government seems to have abandoned what it argued to Judge Reagan and what Judge Reagan adopted in favor of an intended loss theory. And all I would like to say about that is that that doesn't get them out of the requirement that cause be demonstrated. Cause is obviously demonstrated differently in an intended loss situation, but the guideline application note and all of the case law says...
I think they should have proved?
They have to prove, if they're going to go with intended loss, I think you're going to have a new sentencing hearing, because that's not what Judge Reagan did.
What do they have to prove?
Under intended loss, Your Honor? Yeah. Under intended loss, they have to prove that Mr. Komodo intended that people be fooled into thinking that they were getting a credit card when they were, in fact, getting a pay-as-you-go card.
Well, that's what the whole case is about. I understand.
It is what the whole case is about, although the jury rejected that theory, and I understand that the government can still go with it. But they have to prove that he intended that that be their understanding. And if you look at the scripts that were used, which, you know, the government says they were deceptive, the judge thought they were deceptive, they're sales pitches, obviously, but they contained accurate information. To say that everyone who heard those words and signed up deceived when there is accurate information.
Wait a second. That's not how fraud cases are proved. You don't call all the victims of the fraud and ask them whether they were...
No, you don't
that's
have
not
to.
What a scheme to defraud is. It doesn't matter whether.
That's not how fraud liability is proved, Your Honor, but that's how loss causation is proved. And I'm not saying they have to call all of them.
Sentencing operates in these cases.
No, you do a reasonable estimate, Your Honor, but just assuming 100%.
Reasonable estimate. If you have someone who hoped to steal $40 million from people, you don't have to. We don't have to ask any of those people where they were fooled.
If you're going to prove actual loss at sentencing, you do, Your Honor, because part of loss causation is that the loss be genuinely caused by the misrepresentation the government says it's proved or that the district court relies on. For purposes of intended loss, you have to prove that the defendant intended to cause the loss. And in this instance, you have a defendant...
I don't understand that distinction.
Between intended and actual?
No, I understand the distinction between intended and actual. I don't understand why you have... need more proof for intended than for actual.
Well, let me give you an example.
You're not liable for actual losses that occurred for reasons unrelated to your criminal
activity. Well, let's assume that I receive a phone call And I am told, and the script is read to me, and the words, and I am told it's a pay-as-you-go card. And I say, I want a pay-as-you-go card. I tried to get a MasterCard, and I couldn't. And a pay-as-you-go MasterCard is still better than nothing, because it will allow me to make plane reservations, hotel reservations, buy things online. And so I say, okay, sign me up. I haven't been defrauded. I haven't been defrauded out of anything.
Well, that has nothing to do with intended versus actual.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, actual is what the district court did. Intended is what...
I understand you. Look, you're either defrauded or you're not defrauded.
Right.
Now, if you're defrauded, you have an actual loss. If you're not defrauded, you see through the fraud, that's an intended loss. I don't see what...
Intent is not a question. Intent is about the intent of the defendant, Your Honor. Intended loss is about the intent of the defendant.
Look, you can't have a fraud case without intent to defraud someone.
But you can have an intent. It depends on how you mean to do it.
Look.
It depends on how you mean to defraud them.
Take a simple fraud case.
Okay.
I make a misrepresentation. One person is fooled.
Mm-hmm.
And he incurs an actual loss. That's actual loss.
Yes.
The other person is not fooled. That's the intended loss.
Maybe.
I don't see any difference in so far as sentences
without,
is concerned.
I can't address that hypothetical without knowing about the representation.
You address the hypothetical, then you can complicate it if you want.
Okay.
In my little simple case, mm-hmm. there's no difference in sentencing in the sentencing hearing between these two cases.
If, addressing your hypothetical, Your Honor, if the person who wasn't fooled because he heard accurate information in what he was told,
that's not tenable. And that would make these cases completely, these cases would be completely unmanageable. Okay, thank you, Mr. Mendoki. Mr. Ruppert?
Thank you. If it please the court, Bruce Ruppert, Assistant U.S. Attorney, Southern Illinois, and I was trial counsel. Let me clear up a fundamental misconception that the defendant has about these forensic images. He repeats in his reply brief that it was in a form that was totally unreadable by the defense. I would ask the court to turn to the actual transcript of the evidentiary hearing on the motion to dismiss, in which they put their forensic... Pardon me?
Where do you want us to turn to?
Page 91.
Of what? Of the
transcript. I'm going to read an excerpt from the transcript on this issue. And Mr. Libby was asked about the format in which that these images were taken. The defense argues that it's in all of these were imaged in iLook, a proprietary government format. But on page 91, Mr. Libby says, some of these other drives, and I'm quoting, are acquired in Encase, which is what I have. I haven't had, because of time constraints, didn't have the opportunity to look at them all. But I see from the tags on several of them, they are acquired in Encase, which is the application that I have that is used by both myself and the government. Question, okay. Answer. So I don't know why, but I think that the only one there that is done in iLook was Mr. Purcelli, but I haven't had the opportunity to evaluate all of them. So of the 12, the 13 hard drives, there was only evidence at the hearing, evidentiary hearing, on the motion to dismiss that only one of them was done in a format which the defendant was unable to read. Now, the defense also offers the theory that there were numerous requests for digital evidence that were turned down by the government. That is absolutely false, and there's no evidence in the record of that. The evidence was that we did provide open file discovery. As a matter of fact, all of these forensic images that were taken by predecessor agencies were in a box located in the evidence room, fully available, always available for inspection and copying. We discussed that at the initial meeting that we had, and that's discussed in the record.
So the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Illinois had physical possession of all the evidence you were going to use at trial.
That's correct. And all of the evidence was in the evidence room, and it was available to the defense from day one. Now, what their argument turns on
except
is
except the one they couldn't read because...
Except one they couldn't read, and there was no request to convert that until not only after trial, but after the ruling on the motion for judgment of acquittal and motion for a new trial. And at that point, it's like, look, they had not only these hard drives which they could read. They argue that, well, the Postal Inspection Service actually had, in addition to these, had 11 CDs and only provided 8. So the three CDs were provided late. Up until this point, there were several months that elapsed between the time the motion to dismiss was filed and the time that there was a final ruling on the motion for judgment of acquittal and motion for a new trial, or even a motion to reconsider. There was not one document was ever identified that was even had marginal relevancy to this case, much let alone be rise to the level of Brady materiality.
6,400 customer files that he mentioned.
Well, he argues that they made the assertion that this stuff was destroyed, and their argument below, and the judge had an evidentiary hearing, and their argument was that Jay Langford, who was a partner of Specialty Outsourcing Solutions, had testified that these were generated. But the trial court, in the trial court's denial of the motion to dismiss, the trial court said there was never actually any evidence that these customer forms were on site when Secret Service executed a search warrant and picked it up. What the court found was is that there was evidence that there were 34 boxes removed by Secret Service from Specialty Outsourcing Solutions in Waco, Texas, and that there were 34 boxes picked up by the Postal Inspection Service by Specialty Outsourcing Solutions, and there were 34 boxes of SOS materials that were made available to the defense. So the trial court said that the evidence just didn't link up on this assertion that there were any documents that were in fact destroyed.
What was Mr. Bertocchi talking about when what was the source of his estimate that only 0.3% of the recipients of these pitches complained?
His evidence, there were a very...
Is that connected to the 6,400 customer files, or...?
For some reason, there were a small number of customer complaint or forms reflecting customer complaints that were kept on site. The evidence was that was only a small fraction of the entire universe.
That's why I wanted the 6,400 to have a larger sample.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I specifically objected at trial to any argument based on trying to generalize to a general population of complaints from this group of records because there was no indication that it was a sample.
Well, it was a sample. You're saying it's not representative sample or random
correct.
Or something.
And the judge sustained that objection. This was from the very beginning, open file discovery. There was at the
well,
time...
Well, you open file for what you had, but apparently you didn't get everything initially, right?
Well,
from
no, I think we had...
From the investigative agencies?
We had everything that they had. That they kept. Now, in terms of Specialty Outsourcing Solutions, there was testimony during the motion to dismiss hearing that the Secret Service picked up hard drives and returned the hard drives to SOS. So there's no evidence that there was any digital evidence there at all. And actually, it would stand to reason why they would not have imaged it, because there was substantive evidence at trial that the whole reason that Cal Komodo outsourced customer service was to maintain a buffer between himself and regulators. So it seems obvious that when the search warrant was executed on Specialty Outsourcing Solutions, that Secret Service thought that they were executing a search warrant on the fraudulent telemarketing operation, when all they were doing was executing a search warrant on a contract room that provided customer service, providing providing material of dubious evidentiary value in terms of proving the underlying scheme, which was run now not in Waco, Texas. But
could it be exculpatory, though? I mean,
well, there was the trial. We had an evidentiary hearing on it, and the trial judge, Judge Reagan, said that there was no basis for the government to conclude that any of this material would have been exculpatory. The issue at that point becomes, since we came into this late, the issue, and the Postal Inspection Service didn't execute the search warrant, the issue becomes under the case law, it's a destruction of evidence and failure to preserve issue. And in those circumstances, there has to be reason for the government to believe that it had exculpatory material. And what the trial judge said is it wasn't obvious at the time that any of that material was exculpatory.
But if that they didn't know it was customer service, they were...
Well, they knew it was customer service, but they would have assumed that they were executing it on the entire operation because the only numbers that were available to customer, 800 numbers, rang into specialty outsourcing solutions. So if they, for Premier, these were the Komodo's in-house programs, Premier, Advantage, Capital, and Capital First, I think, were the three in-house programs. So it would have been assumed that they were executing it on the source of the telemarketing operation, and all they were executing it on was the customer service operation, not the outbound rooms, not the headquarters of the operation. But in any event, the trial judge said that there was no evidence of any destruction, first of all, no evidence at all of any destruction, and there was no evidence that the government thought had any reason to believe that any of that material was exculpatory.
Are you saying there's only one hard drive which is in this unreadable government code?
That's what I'm saying is there's only evidence of one unreadable hard drive. And it's on page 149 of the transcript of the motion hearing.
Okay.
And again, all of this was made available. There was no discussion of any digital evidence. Adam Latham testified at the hearing. He was present at the 8-hour reverse proffer where we outline our case. There was only discussion of providing them with the video interviews and the verification recordings. What we did was, is we took native production, which consisted of about 315,000 electronic files, which would have been pulled off of the forensic images by predecessor agencies, and we provided those to the defense. As a matter of fact, one of their motions to continue said that it would take their team of six people 2.5 years to review all of the digital evidence that we provided. But I return to the fact that the fundamental flaw of the appellant's position here is that they did not identify below one single document that were in those hard drives that was not already provided in native production. Not one document that had even a scintilla of relevance to the case except for this body of they claim is homosexual pornography, which...
How did that get in? I don't understand.
Well, they're arguing is they found homosexual pornography on the laptop of one of the officers of a sale. That's in their brief, which is interesting. They argue here on the one hand that we provided it in unreadable form, and then they argue on the other hand, well, this homosexual pornography may have had some conceivable relevance because maybe they might have been able to impeach the witness with that. And I don't think homosexuality is a character flaw, and I don't see that it would have been relevant. But that's the only thing that they have identified that was produced in these forensic images that was not produced to them. And I would submit, certainly under the Bagley standard of materiality, they have to show something.
Wait. Do you have this open file that was in the file and they weren't entitled?
Yeah, I mean, everything that they, all of these hard drives that that they argue were produced at the last minute actually were in the box in the evidence room, and they spent 4 days looking at it. Now, they argue below that one of their guys, and this is argued in our brief, one of the people that they brought to help move boxes back and forth between the evidence room to where they were actually looking at them, had asked not the case agent, and certainly not me, but had asked one of the people in the inspection service, do we have a copy of what's there? And he said, yeah, you have you have everything digitally. The problem, the district court apparently didn't give any credence to that because it's not mentioned anywhere in his opinion. Factually, there's a problem with that assertion because the testimony of Mr. Hendrickson, who was that witness, he described a box of computer components that were located in an upper shelf when, in fact, the record, and Inspector Latham testifies to this in the hearing, those actual hard drives were located on a lower shelf. They also claim that this representation was made to them by Ron Scheid, who is a contract analyst with the inspection service. That's also dealt with in the record. Adam Latham was permitted to testify on a hearsay basis because Mr. Scheid was not present. We only had a day's notice of this allegation that there was no such conversation with him. So that's the only real evidence here pertaining to those hard drives. So they were all available from the get-go. There was no concealing of anything.
Mr. Ripper, could you speak for a moment about the sentencing issue, please? I gather you're being charged with having changed tunes between the trial and the appeal.
Well, we have never been of the view. Clearly, we had no duty to prove reliance in the trial itself. I don't see anything in the case law or the application notes of 2B1.1 that suggests that we have to prove individual reliance in a guideline issue. These determinations do not rise to the level of even a civil trial. A judge is entitled to make a reasonable estimate of the loss, and when they're selling something that has no value, and we had individual victims testify, this had no value to me, I see no reason why you can't simply take the purchase price and multiply it by the number of, in this case, actual purchasers and say that's the loss.
On the theory that was the intended loss.
That was the intended loss. They were given something that had no inherent value. We know what the purchase price, you just multiply it out, that's reasonable. But if we were to go in the area of intended loss, actually, that would bump up the offense level considerably because we're up several levels from that. I do want to, if I can, I notice my time is up. If I could just make one further statement with reference to these.
It's important.
It is very important, mainly because they're making allegations of misconduct and that affects my professional reputation. The court, this is on page 162 of the transcript, of the motion to dismiss hearing, invites both sides to say specifically what was requested by whom and what was given by whom. That's what the district court wanted us to represent. And so the defendant below, his attorney, had the opportunity to make representations as an officer of the court. And all they were able to muster, not that there was any discussions with me asking for digital forensics or any digital evidence, there were no letters, there were no motions, there were no oral requests. He simply says on page 170 that his secretary contacted me and asked what size external hard drive that I needed. I later on in the transcript, this is on page 183, deny there was any substantive conversation with the secretary. In short, there was we refused them absolutely nothing pre-trial.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ruppert. Mr. Pataki, we'll give you a minute, although your time is expired.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to stay within it, or I will stay within it. First, as to the 6,400 documents, yes, I would have preferred a bigger sample, but it's a little bit raw for the government not to turn over the rest of them and say, your sample isn't big enough. They say that the Secret Service turned up, gave back all the SOS documents. If that's so, then why, after trial, when the defense attorney wrote to the Secret Service, did they write back and say, we have the entire SOS file and we'll give it to you? And if they had given it back and the government didn't care anymore, why did the government say no? Why did the prosecutor say to the Secret Service, no, you can't have it? On the readability of the disks, in Mr. Libby testified at the trial as of his efforts at that time. But he filed an affidavit that is attached to the motion to reconsider in the record that said unequivocally, I cannot read what is on any, not just one, but any of those hard drives. Finally, the notion that this package did not have value is just wrong. There is value to having a MasterCard in today's economy, even if it's not a credit card. It allows you to do all kinds of other things. And to say that it's worthless by definition is not estimating or calculating loss. It's making an assumption. And finally, on the issue of the homosexual pornography, it is certainly not the defendant's contention that homosexuality is impeaching. The reason that that information was provided in a readable form 2 days before trial, it came in the box with the hard drives, but it wasn't on the hard drives. What that would have been able to impeach is Mr. Dunn testified that Mr. Dunn was apparently caught trying to destroy his computer, and his claim was Mr. Komodo told him to. The presence of that material on his computer indicated that he had another motive to destroy his computer, but that material wasn't turned over until 2 days before trial, when the lawyers were involved in getting ready to try the case and were not expecting to be looking at this whole raft of new evidence. Thank you, and I appreciate the extra time, Your Honor.
Well, thank you very much, both counsel and Mr. Bertocchi. We thank you for your accepting the appointment and your vigorous efforts. They weren't appointed? No. Well, we thank you anyway. We thank Mr. Rupert.